From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Berkeley.
Hercules, California.
OTL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Coming up, we're talking with Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf as she starts her second year in office. We'll hear her thoughts on officer-involved shootings.
I've personally gone in and reviewed the body-worn camera footage in every one of these instances to be sure that I have seen myself the vantage point of the officer who was involved.
And we'll hear her plans for managing a booming economy that's changing the face of Oakland.
So unlike San Francisco, I did not give Uber any sort of financial incentive to move to Oakland.
Also, we'll hear about San Francisco's own killer composer.
They sent him off to San Quentin, gave him a life sentence for murder. He arrived at San Quentin and immediately founds a San Quentin penitentiary band.
The sweet and sour sounds of our cities, today on Cross Currents. Yesterday, protesters blocked westbound traffic on the Bay Bridge. They represented a group called Black.Seed, and they were demonstrating against police violence. Their demands, shared online, included the termination of Oakland Police Chief Sean Wendt and San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr. They also called for the resignation of Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf. Schaaf just started her second year as mayor. Her challenges include helping to manage relations between Oaklanders and their police department, as well as an affordable housing crisis, a struggling school district, and professional sports teams that are trying to skip town.
We're willing to invest in the public infrastructure that's appropriate. We're willing to make some sort of long-term lease agreement so that development could help to create some revenue streams for the team. But I think that that's the right balance as far as keeping the team here, which is absolutely doable, with being responsible to the taxpayers of the city.
To find out more about how she sees the next year unfolding, I spoke with Mayor Libby Schaaf in her office at City Hall. Some of the questions I'm going to bring to you were solicited from our audience by email, Facebook, and Twitter. And the first question actually comes from Facebook and somebody named Tisha, who said, honestly, I just want to know if you're going to do anything to help Oakland stay Oakland or just sell it out like San Francisco is. She was really excited to have you as mayor, and then she feels like you've done nothing but pander to businesses and big money interests. And so what do you think of that?
What government can do sometimes feels limited and frustrating, but you better believe that I'm going to fight like hell to keep this the city that I love. We are working very hard on looking at some new and creative ways to avoid displacement of our long-term residents. We're really digging down deep to see where particularly communities of colors are living and what strategies are we using, and do they actually address preserving that diversity?
What are some of the initiatives you're talking about?
So, for example, we're finding that a lot of people live in smaller units, like 2 to 4 unit buildings. So some of these strategies around building like large buildings, multi-unit buildings, might not actually impact a particular population. So things like condo conversion regulations is something that we're looking at for 2 to 4 unit buildings. The idea of adding secondary units, which was a big push of mine that just got through the council, is something that we also think can help add economic diversity in neighborhoods and also help struggling homeowners, which Oakland also has, with their income situations. And then secondly, we're also really digging into the issue of artist living and working spaces. We are borrowing a page from the book of San Francisco of an organization called CAST, because we really are looking at an acquisition strategy. We want to buy property so that we can preserve it for cultural use and artist housing.
Can you afford to buy property when you're competing against private developers or investors who are looking to do the same thing for their own purposes?
That is a challenge. And believe me, I'm looking outside of the city's coffers. But I really love bringing other people's money to Oakland. And so that's one of the things I have been successful in this year, is attracting outside resources, particularly from philanthropy. And so that's where I'm going. And that's part of the conversation we're also having with the corporate community here in Oakland. How can you as the business community that is going to prosper from Oakland's boom, how can you also help us fight displacement? And we're having conversations with companies about contributing to low-interest loan funds for this type of development.
Mm-hmm. And one of the companies has gotten a lot of attention, especially in how it's going to be affecting Oakland, is Uber. And this is actually one that, you know, might bring up the cautionary tale of San Francisco because, you know, several years ago, the Uber of San Francisco was Twitter when it moved in, and it really reshaped a lot of downtown San Francisco. Now Uber's moving in to downtown Oakland in a couple of years, moving thousands of employees in, and it's become a big symbol of the tech and real estate money coming to the city. I'm wondering then, do you have a way in which you could work with them to benefit the city? Or what do you see the city getting out of an Uber moving into Oakland?
So unlike San Francisco, I did not give Uber any sort of financial incentive to move to Oakland. That also means I don't have a hammer to require certain things of them. But I did write them a letter upon their announcement saying what I hope and expect from them. And I identified four areas that were my highest priorities for them being a good corporate citizen. And, you know, I believe that Oakland has the opportunity to define corporate citizenship in a way that's unique to Oakland. And that means striving for equity and diversity and being honest about the diversity in your workforce and your leadership and actively helping create that opportunity pipeline so that the very diverse young people that we are raising in this city have the opportunities to take advantage of those Uberlicious jobs.
That is Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff. We're speaking with her in her office. You spoke of a public safety plan in your State of the City a few months back and said that you would be presenting that by the end of 2015. What's the status at this point?
Well, I do have a completed draft, and I can certainly tell you conceptually what some of the themes that came out of this kind of year-long planning process were.
Yeah, please do. I'd like to hear that.
You know, Oakland certainly believes in a holistic approach, one that sees safety as much more than just policing. And so the themes really come out of this idea of thriving families, safe neighborhoods, which is more place-based, and then restorative city. And that's part of our equity commitment to recognize the historical context of violence in this community and that we have a lot of harm that needs to be healed.
And you are planning on hiring a director for public safety who will oversee this, right, and help coordinate the city agencies, foundations, community organizations, and others in violence prevention?
You are just nailing my biggest disappointment of my first year as mayor was my inability to fill that role. I had a couple of candidates that I thought were going to take the job, and we had long conversations because they entailed relocations. And for one reason or another, those did not come to pass. And so that has been a frustration. Now, I have filled a position that I think is just as important in the safety equation, and that's my director of education. When we talk about our comprehensive safety plan, as I said, we start with a thriving family. And what that means is young people that see that they have the expectations, the resources, and the skills to be successful in the college and career of their choice. And so our education director has been working very closely with a huge swath of partners to launch what truly is going to be the most ambitious Promise program that a city has ever seen.
Now, tell me more about the Oakland Promise program.
We'll be formally launching it on January 28th, so I'll probably get in trouble if I tell you too much about it. But I can tell you that it is designed to triple the number of Oakland Public School students who graduate from college. We believe we could do that in 8 years. And it does that by taking a cradle-to-career approach. Now, we recognize that there are a lot of things that need to be successful in our schools and from our communities to give kids, like I said, the expectations, the skills, and the resources to succeed in the college and career of their choice. But as a city, we're excited to be adding kind of four new things. A birth strategy called My Brilliant Baby, a K-to-college savings program modeled on San Francisco's, where every single kindergartner is going to start school with a college savings account. Things called Future Centers, which will help guide middle school and high school students in life, career, and college planning, as well as a very ambitious college completion program where we're not just giving scholarship money. We're giving an annual commitment of significant scholarship support, as well as mentoring, peer support, academic support. We don't want to just give a kid a one-year scholarship. We want to be wrapped around them until they get that college degree in their hands.
Is there a lot of money that's going into this program from Oakland to try to make it successful? It's really quite a remarkable goal to triple the amount of college graduates.
It is a remarkable goal, and I can tell you if there were just one thing that I could accomplish as mayor, it is this. Because frankly, I don't think there's anything more that I could do to make my city safer, more prosperous, more thriving, more healthy than this.
That's Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff. We're speaking with her in her office at City Hall. I'd like to turn to a couple more questions that we received from social media and email. And these have to do with Black Lives Matter and police community relations. One is from a Twitter user, Kat, who asks, why, after 18 months without an officer-involved shooting, 8 blacks have been murdered by the OPD on your watch?
So in 2015, my first year as mayor, we had 5 fatal officer-involved shootings by the Oakland Police Department. I'm not entirely sure where the number 8 comes from. I take these incredibly seriously. I mean, there is no more serious expression of the city's power than when a police officer under the authority of law takes someone's life. And so I applaud people who are watching this and demanding legitimacy and proof that these were absolutely necessary. We have had 5 officer-involved fatal shootings under my watch. I am pleased that the actual total number of uses of force is significantly down. Roughly by 100. It went from roughly 600 uses of force in 2014 to 500 uses of force in 2015. Obviously, the number of fatalities is quite a bit higher. And as soon as these incidences happen, it's my job to ensure that the investigation is very thorough and very trustworthy. I've personally gone in and reviewed the body-worn camera footage in every one of these instances to be sure that I have seeing myself, the vantage point of the officer who was involved. And I can just say that we have put many practices in place to avoid any type of use of force that is not justified. Some examples of that, we were one of the very first departments that I've heard of that actually has a foot chase policy, where if someone is detained for something that's not posing a significant and immediate risk, if there is a foot chase and that individual jumps over a fence or goes down an alley, the officers will actually end the pursuit. We also don't do car chases except in very limited instances because the analysis showed that many innocent people were being harmed in these car chases. And so those types of policies, along with nationally recognized force de-escalation training, are things that are very new for the Oakland Police Department, and they're absolutely intended to ensure that use of force is as limited as possible.
And to add to that, somebody who goes by Blacklight by email said they're concerned about mental health training provided for officers, particularly considering that rate of OISs.
So I think that mental health is a huge issue of our time, and California in general has got to do more to address it. It's ridiculous that our police department ends up being a governmental department that deals with the mentally ill. this is a huge problem. And if you look at the Washington Post's big, they did a big initiative looking at all of the officer-involved shootings across the country. And mental health is a huge factor in them on a national level. They actually highlighted Oakland as the example of great training. So our officers are all trained in dealing with mental health issues. And we even have piloted something with Alameda County where we have a designated officer who has a trained clinician in the patrol car with him or her responding to any call that involves mental illness. We've expanded that from 1 to 3 clinicians that ride with the trained officer. And this is a practice that I hope people start doing across the country. Is it enough? Absolutely not. We have got to do more.
That was Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff speaking from her office at City Hall. There's a lot more to our conversation. To hear the full 40-minute interview, head to KALW.org, click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Mayor Schaff likes to talk about what she calls Oakland's secret sauce, the particular qualities that makes Oakland uniquely Oakland. Shira Gums grew up in Oakland, and she's a participant with Remix Your Life, an arts program run by Youth Radio. Gums sent us this poem, which she calls Gumbo, relating her home city of Oakland to a family recipe for gumbo which combines lots of different ingredients.
Wind. Rain, dirt, and sunshine were the only elements that symbolizes Earth the best. And the birth of life was an addition. But who would have thought this pedigree would explode into indefinable diversity? It all became a surplus of foundations for roots of what went from abnormality to the colors of life. All of the ingredients were contained in this fluorescent metropolitan region. In this case, it would be a big pot, set stable and ready for everything to be thrown in. The rice, which represents the agriculture and natural growth of crops. The shellfish, that represents the high access of waters in the seas where they came from and where natives were able to go to and use for the growth of nature that we observe today. The vegetables, which represents the strength of the soil where they grew from and to provide for the birds so they can be strong enough to fly through tough winds. The meat, which represents the animals and their ability to migrate through different habitats. The boiling water, which comes from the skies and falls into what great bodies of oceans, rivers, and lakes we have. And finally, the seasonings that represents the essence of the different stages the environment has. So as we walk through streets of buildings and skyscrapers, we as residents can taste and enjoy the heart of Oakland.
That's poet Shira Gums, a participant with the Remix Your Life Arts Program at Youth Radio. That story was sound designed by James Rollins. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. We'll head across the Bay Bridge now, where celebrations have been taking place to mark the centennial of the 1915 Panama Pacific Exposition. You may recall this nearly year-long event marked the opening of the Panama Canal. That was the Panama part. But it was also a showcase for new inventions and fun and music. The old-style lights on the ferry building featuring the date 1915 were turned off back on December 4th, as they were on that date a century earlier, which marked the last day of the fair. But the celebration isn't over yet, and that's the case for an online exhibit that we're going to hear about now. KALW Stephen Short talked with the curator of Popular Songs of the Panama Pacific International Exposition, who points out that evil sometimes scuttled around behind the bright lights and industrial innovations. And a note to our listeners, sound recording was in its infancy a century ago. So while the music in this piece was originally heard during the 1915 Expo, most of the songs in this story were recorded in the 1980s by the Chrysanthemum Ragtime Band.
You know, it was not always easy going to get the 1915 fair off the ground, because if you think of the date, you may recall that there was a great war that consumed Europe in 1914-18, World War I.
James Keller is the curator of an online exhibit for the Society of California Pioneers. It's part of their ongoing commemoration of the Pan Pacific Expo, held in San Francisco back in 1915. And part of his job was to set that era to music.
We'll end that scrap in Europe at that San Fran Pan-American Fair.
While reference to war may have been unusual, Keller says songs about current events at the time were very common.
Anything that becomes particularly newsworthy at this time turns into something to be celebrated in a song.
Hello, Central, can't you see?
One of the most momentous advancements that occurred in connection with the PPIE was the introduction of transcontinental telephone service.
Think of it. It's nothing to call anyone anywhere today. But this was the first time in the history of the world that you could actually talk to someone in a remote location and they could hear you and talk back.
In fact, the AT&T company opened its transcontinental phone line just before the opening of the fair itself, but they actually delayed the opening of commercial service until just before the fair was going to open, so that it became part of the whole publicity and boosterism package for the fair. Yet another wonder to go to the fair to witness.
Alexander Graham Bell, the man credited with inventing the telephone, was there and recreated that now famous first conversation with his assistant, Mr. Thomas Watson. There are no recordings of that famous exchange, so we'll have to settle for this dramatization by actors Don Ameche and Henry Fonda in the 1939 movie, The Story of Alexander Graham Bell.
Ahoy, Mr. Watson. Can you hear me now? Mr. Watson?
I'm here. I want you.
You're tough.
And so they said those same words, but this time they were being transmitted from New York to San Francisco. And the song that this gave rise to remains a little bit famous to this day. Hello, Frisco.
Cute compositions like this were crowd pleasers, but so were more substantial songs, such as ballads and military marches.
Well, yes, marches were very important. Those were quite popular.
But the author of one of these, the San Francisco-Panama 1915 March, became more famous than his song when he ended up in San Quentin prison.
Yes, quite an astonishing author. His name was Damascus Gajour.
Gajour claimed to have sold one of his marches for $52,000 in 1911. That would be the equivalent of well over $1 million today, a truly unbelievable sum. Keller didn't believe it either, so he did some research and found a newspaper story from 1915 while the fair was still in progress, saying that our composer had been arrested at his home in Oakland for murder.
And it turns out that Damascus Gajour had gotten into some very shady dealings with a moneylender in Oakland. He had borrowed $1,000. The moneylender came and demanded payment back. Gajour stuffed him into a closet, stabbed him 2 times, and was just at the point of dragging his body out onto his front porch where he could hang him from the front porch to show the world how evil moneylenders are. At that point, his son-in-law arrived and said, "You cannot do that." They sent him off to San Quentin, gave him a life sentence for murder, second-degree murder. He arrived at San Quentin, and immediately founds a San Quentin penitentiary band and directs it and writes lots of more music for it.
Gayor, citing his good deeds, applied for parole. This was denied, because a life sentence for murder must be served. But Gayor was later released after he had a stroke.
If you had a stroke, you could get out of prison. They would rather have you out on the streets rather than have to care for you in the hospital.
Oh, he's not going to cause much problem now. He's had a stroke.
That was certainly the attitude. And so they released him. And it was another surge of publicity. So here we have a murderous composer, of which there are really not very many in the history of music. There are a few, but it brought me great joy to be able to add another to the list, Damascus Gayor.
The good old days weren't always as innocent as some of us might like to imagine. Sometimes temper and passion flared from under the starched collars and flowery hats, as we've just learned.
One thing I love about the popular songs of this era is how vividly they bring alive a moment that is gone. When we listen to these songs, if there's a recording, it may last only 3 minutes, but for 3 minutes, we're really there. They take us right back to the PPIE of 1915.
Lost in Another Era, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
You can hear vintage recordings of a few of these songs and see several sheet music covers from the Panama Pacific International Exposition online at kalw.org. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, True Quinn, Edwin Okongo, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by James Rollins. Line producer was Jeremy Dalmas. Our managing editor is Jen Chian. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Hana Baba is our usual host, and our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.